Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Hello, everyone. Nice to have you with us again today. I hope you are listening to us every week. And as you know, we come your way talking about the issues that affect your home, your family, and your finances. And my thanks to Radio America, my thanks to the Credit Union, and of course, my thanks to you. It's always a pleasure. This is the 400, I don't know, something show that I've done. And every once in a while, the topic that we do turns to our first guest today, Glynis Walker Anderson, and she has written a book called Stealing Joy. And I'm going to explain that, but let me just say a couple of things to you. First of all, the thing that I have learned in my 50-plus years is that all of us at some point become caregivers. It's just the way it's set up. You're going to look out for somebody, or you're going to help pay for somebody, or you're going to ignore somebody. But most of us will become caregivers and look out for our parents, our grandparents, an older brother or sister, a sibling. It doesn't make any difference. We're required just by our system to work that way. And generally, we get through it with relatively minor issues, but not always. Sometimes there are major issues. Sometimes those that we look after are hurt. There are financial and emotional elder abuses out there, and some of them are major. And that's what Glynis Walker is talking about in her book, Stealing Joy. Something happened to someone that she dearly loves. And we're going to talk with her about that. And then following Glynis, we will then turn to the issue of a little bit lighter subject, okay? Five ways that you can get kids to do chores without complaining or paying them this summer. I don't know if sure that's possible, but my guest has written a book about that, and we'll be talking with him about the possibility of actually getting your kids to do something around the house. His name is Greg Marcet. He's a founder of My Job Chart, a new chore app. Well, we'll see if that works. But right now, let me turn to Glynis Walker Anderson, who joins us from the Midwest, somewhere in Chicago. Her book is called Stealing Joy. And I thank you, Glynis, for being with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome, Paul. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. The motivation for this is what? Why did you write this book?
Because three women stole my mother. My mother's name was Joy. So that's hence the title. And I did not see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it went very quickly. I did not know she had Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. She was very good at covering it up.
Mm-hmm.
And she lived at a distance, which made it more difficult. But I had already taken care of all her finances. I had all her paperwork, POAs, legal stuff. All her bills were paid by debit, so she really didn't have to deal with her finances. And I thought, how clever am I for doing that? Well, it kind of backfired.
The problem is that we're dealing with people, with human beings, who still think and move and do what they want to do to some degree. You took care of everything that you should have taken care of, but somehow it wasn't enough to keep her in a safe place, was it?
No. Even though I had to end up putting her in a nursing home because she wasn't... Her doctors told me she couldn't live on her own. She was wandering. She was falling. And I thought, okay, I'm going to make this big decision. And you know it is a very big decision to put somebody out of their house and into their home.
Absolutely.
And I had to, I'm an only child, and I had to make the decision. And I thought, I'm protecting her now. She's protected, and I can kind of breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
what happened? How you did everything that you were supposed to do. You sound like you were thoughtful, and I know you are based on reading through. So as a thoughtful, loving daughter, you did what you should have done for your mother, Glynis. What happened?
Well, I saw her on June 22nd, 2010. That was the weekend that we settled her in the nursing home. Then I had to come back to Chicago. On June 23rd, one day later, my lawyer came out and took her out of the nursing home, took her to her office, got her to sign a new will and a new power of attorney. Guess who got to be the new beneficiary?
Your lawyer.
And the neighbor next door, my
Are
mother's
you
neighbor,
serious?
Who was not a friend.
So they were acting like you were doing a disservice to your mother. And I
they told everybody I was dumping her in the nursing home, and they told her that, too. And, of course, with Alzheimer's, they're very easily influenced.
Yes.
And the closest person that they used to love so much is the one that they usually blame for everything.
Absolutely.
And that's who that was.
I'm not a disinterested party. I have gone through something similar, very close. Mother with Alzheimer's, a mother who decided that we were stealing from her. But they have to be dealt with, don't they? And very often, by the time you can get it straightened out, they've stolen joy.
Well, they had stolen her, and then when they finished stealing her, because they told her a lot of lies about me, like I had stolen her dog. Well, she was in a nursing home. I had to take the dog home with me. What was I going to do with it? It wasn't something I was trying to steal. I already had dogs. Anyway, and a bunch of stuff that wasn't true, and so that turned her against me, towards them. It was kind of like the Stockholm Syndrome. I wasn't, the lawyer went to the nursing home and said, this woman, me, has been abusing her mother. That's why she's dumped her here. And I'm the new power of attorney, and I don't want anything more to do with her. Do not take any phone calls from her.
Oh.
And that pretty much snipped the cord that attached me to my mother.
My guest, Glynis Walker. He's written a book, Stealing Joy. We're talking about what could happen to you. It happens to a lot of folks. Listen carefully, folks, and learn how to avoid this. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back with Glynis and more. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
Your loved one is in danger. And it's close to impossible, unless you know the signs and what to do about it, to stop it. Elderly abuse cases is rising. And if the predictors are right, it will double by 2050. And by the way, we're talking about friends and family members and neighbors that oftentimes are the ones that do the damage. In the case of Glynis Walker, author of Stealing Joy, it was the attorney that she hired that then went into a conspiracy, if you will. Glynis, what did you do? You knew that this was happening or was happening. You were being accused. You're being called the person that was doing the abusing, which was not true. What did you do?
Well, I figured it out about a month into this. I'm pretty quick on the uptake, but by then they had already got all the paperwork in order, so that they were the power of attorney and they were in the will. My neighbor. My mother's neighbor wrote the will on a piece of kitchen paper with flowers on the top and left my mother's house, which was her major asset, to her and her husband, the lawyer, and the supermarket checker, who was apparently part of the whole conspiracy. And I didn't find that out until after my mother died, but I did find out about it. And I was lucky because they would have tried to probate that will because the lawyer who was involved had the original copy of my mother's will. And she hid it, and she wouldn't tell anybody where it was. Meantime, they got guardianship of my mother because they went to the judge. Lawyer knew the judge, small city. Everybody
sure,
knows everybody.
Sure, sure. And the judge gave her permission? The judge gave her permission to take her out of the nursing home?
No, she just took it upon herself. But she, right after that, they applied for guardianship.
Oh, I see.
And
okay.
They got it because I was too far away. And I couldn't look after her. Well, I'd been looking after her for 4 years. It wasn't like I'd ignored her, and I was always visiting, and I had two children of my own that I also had to look after. So it was it's a tough row to hoe being a caregiver. Anyway, so they got guardianship, and just after that, my mother ended up in the hospital. She had a bowel obstruction, so I wasn't allowed to have any information about her, not even my children. Right?
Amazing.
So her doctor called me and said, she has this problem, and it might clear up on its own, or she might have to have an operation. And I said, she's 88, she's very frail. How do you think that she'll manage with that? And he goes, she won't make it.
She won't make it?
No. And she wouldn't have. And the next thing I know, I got an email from the lawyer saying, if you talk to the doctor again, I will sue him for talking to me.
This, talking to you about your mother.
Exactly.
This is just an amazing story. So
I know. And then I tried calling the hospital where I knew that she was, and they were not allowed to tell me that she was there. I'm her only relative, right?
Oh, jeepers.
So the lawyer and the neighbor decided that she really needed to have this operation. Five doctors told them, because I ended up having to subpoena the hospital notes to get them, five doctors told them it would kill her, and they insisted that she have it. And guess what happened?
She didn't have the operation, did she?
Yeah. She died a horrible, painful death all alone. Nobody even bothered to call me and tell me that this had happened. Except for my mother's doctor, who wasn't afraid of being sued by this woman, and he called and told me.
Unbelievable.
So I went to arrange for her funeral,
right.
And I found out accidentally about the other will, and that's when the battle began, and it lasted for 3 years.
How much did it cost you? How much did this battle?
Seriously, you're going to drop off your chair when
How much?
I tell you. It cost me $500,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Every penny that I would have inherited had things gone the way they were supposed to.
That's an amazing story. We're talking
what choice did I have? You know,
I know.
Had that moment.
It's someone you love.
In my own mind.
It's someone you love, and you do what you can do. My guest is Glynis Walker Anderson. Her book is called Stealing Joy. So how can you protect yourself from what happened to Glynis? When we come back, we'll talk about some things that in her book she tells you that you should and can do. This is Home and Family Finance. Thanks for being with us. I'm Paul Berry. Finance. I am your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors are the Defense Credit Union Council and the Credit Union National Association, and we thank them for their continued support of this program dedicated to making all of us smarter consumers, and I think they're doing just that. My guest is Glynis Walker Anderson. She has written a book called Stealing Joy, her mother's name, who was just abused by scammers, an attorney that was supposed to look out for her, a neighbor who supposedly cared for her. And for Glynis to get her mother's situation straightened out, there were legal fees that cost $500,000, $500,000. So, Glynis, I know now you can look back and say, and part of what your book says, things that we ought to look out for, and let's go through some of them so we can tell people how to stay out of this situation.
Okay, number one, I made my mother a victim. If I had not put the house in her name when my father died in 2006, they would have left her alone because she had nothing else. I mean, she had some money in the bank, and they managed to get that right away. But they wanted the house. That's what it was all about. It was worth about $750,000 at the time. And if I had put it on both our names, she would have been cool. So don't make your parent a victim by letting them keep all their property.
Hmm.
Number two, sign everything that they sign, bank accounts, whatever they have, you know, that they have paperwork with their signature, co-sign. Always have somebody else signing, because then that way they can't get to the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. There's just so many things that you could
One of the things, you put all the assets in a trust, which is just
you
smart.
You could do that. I actually, believe it or not, I did do that. I did do that. It's about 3-4 months in. I created a trust, put the stuff in that house and the money and that into the trust.
Yeah.
When they went to the court and had me raked over the coals by the judge for being a bad daughter, He ordered me to take the stuff out of the trust and put it back in my mother's name. She had severe Alzheimer's, and she was living in a nursing home. She didn't even know who she was.
That's what makes it so tough, because sometimes the people that you're fighting hardest against are your family members who don't know who to believe and think that you're the bad guy when somebody else is. And you know,
well, I was the only family member, and everybody knew I was the good guy.
Just.
But it didn't help. I mean, it took 4 years of my life fighting this. And because most people don't fight, only 1 in 100 cases of financial elder abuse is ever prosecuted successfully. Only 1 in 100. And
amazing.
Those are the ones that are actually reported. Most people don't report it.
Well, you know, these things are such your recommendations, watching for signs of increasing forgetfulness or dementia, and having your mom or dad tested is a good thing, you say.
Tested is a good thing.
Right.
Every 6 months, have them tested.
My mother
would not have passed those tests.
Right. Get a second opinion on surgery or medical needs, which a great idea.
I would have if I'd had any rights to her, but they took her away from me. It was like child custody, except she was 88.
Yeah, just amazing. I'm just reading through some of your recommendations here. You say monitor Medicare summary notices for any questionable charges. And then
keep in touch with anybody they know. Like, I was good friends with her doctor, so he gave me information that was invaluable.
Right.
Know her pharmacist. Make sure they're getting their prescriptions. And what are they for? My mother, when she was in the nursing home, they put her on Seroquel. And if you don't know what that is, go look it up, because they do it a lot in senior living facilities. It's got a black box warning on it that says do not give to elderly dementia patients because it will hasten their death. She was getting 50 milligrams a day.
Amazing. You say warn the senior not to tell anyone how much money or investments he or she has, but it doesn't work when they have Alzheimer's because they don't remember whether they told somebody.
Well, no, she didn't. My mother thought her house was worth $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, but when they're younger and before they have any sort of cognitive impairment, don't talk about what you own.
Yeah. And finally, if a caretaker is needed, do a background check.
Definitely.
And specify what the caretaker can and cannot do.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, the book is called, where can we find the book?
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's all over the world right now because I'm dealing with a case in England right now and another one in Canada where I'm consulting.
Yeah.
It's happening everywhere.
Stealing Joy, a true story of Alzheimer's, elder abuse, and fraud. Dr. Glennis Walker Anderson, thank you, Glennis, for being with us, and good luck with your family.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. We'll be right back with more. We'll be talking about some young folks in just a minute. Stay with us.
Safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And being secure with your finances involves everyone. As you know, this program is aired weekly on the American Forces Radio Network. We are worldwide on 177 military installations all around the world, land and sea. And so often we talk directly to our servicemen. And that's what I want to do right now, because I want them to remember and know that the Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops wherever they may be. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, to support, and encourage military families to save money. Let me say that again, to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. So check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. I hope you do that And you don't have to be in the military to save. As I always say, no matter what you do and where you are, make sure that you save something every week from that paycheck, a little something. Put it away. You'll be glad that you did. Well, last, my guest was, that's a tremendous story, listening to Glynis Walker and the things that she went through. Okay? But let's lighten it up a little bit here, because my next guest has some great ideas that I think anybody as a parent with at least one child or more wants to know about. And that's, hey, I've got three, and I hadn't figured it out, but five ways you can get kids to do chores without complaining or paying them this summer. Greg Marcet is my guest. He is the founder of a program here that he will tell us a little bit more about. But, Greg, I just want you to know, it ain't possible. Just not possible to get these kids. They're going to complain, and I speak from experience. But anyway, welcome to the program. Thank you so much, and glad to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And my grandpa was a full bird colonel in the Army, and so love the service and everything that they do and sacrifice. So thanks for having me on, and you're absolutely right. Kids are going to complain, but we can do a few things to help them not complain, or at least minimize the complaining.
Well, good luck with that. I know you, now, as I understand it, you are the father of six?
Six kids, yes. So we've got a half dozen. I've got lots of battle scars to prove that. and I fully understand how hard it is to be a parent these days. And it seems like it's just getting tougher. And so we hope that we've given a few tools to parents out there to make that job a little bit easier when it comes to at least work and money.
You want to inspire other parents to learn the right ways to get their children to help out around the home and become good citizens. And you're saying that is, how do you do that?
So I think the way you do that is you start early and you stay consistent. And, you know, with my job chart, I started that for my six kids because, you know, all of a sudden they started growing up and I thought, holy smokes, I don't know that they're actually getting it when it comes to the whole you got to work for what you get, and then once you get money, what do you do with it, and all of that. So that necessity was the mother of invention with our family.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, we needed to start teaching these things, so my job chart was born, and now we have 830,000 members using it, and
wow.
Kids have done over 30 million jobs. So we are getting kids to do stuff, and it's exciting.
Well, I want to talk about my job chart and how it works. But before I get there, I want to get to what I think has been my biggest problem with my three children. I wanted things better for them than it was for me growing up. If it wasn't spoken, it was certainly there. And it tended to work. It tended to push me away from asking them to do things that I had to do when I was growing up. I guess I kind of saw that as, well, yeah, you know, things are better now. They don't have to do that. Or is that a legitimate concern on the part of parents who say, I want it better for my kids than I had it, and so I'm not making them do stuff?
You know, I think it's totally natural to want better for your kids than you've had, even if you've had it pretty good. I think it's totally natural, and it just, you know, it really is, because it kind of comes from the love that you have for your kids. I think it's totally natural. But you've got to also realize the reason that it will be better for them is that you teach them correctly and kind of not shelter them from everything, but expose them to things that are very meaningful and impactful in their life that's going to make them better than you are. So it's a fine line that we all have to walk.
Well, the other thing I thought about when I read up on you was this. Anybody with six kids doesn't have time to invent anything. So how did you have time to come up with my job chart?
Hey, sleep is overrated, right? Nobody wants to sleep. You just got to stay up and burn the midnight oil. I just really felt like I've got to do something, because I don't want these kids living with me for the rest of their lives and the rest of my life. So I had to do it. And, you know, it's a wonderful thing. Now, I started my job chart almost 5 years ago, and my oldest back then was 12. And so now he's 17. And you think, holy smokes, he's almost ready to kind of fly out of the nest and be on his own. And it's a good thing to look back a little bit and say, I think I've done something right. This kid, he's 17 now. He's got some jobs under his belt. He's got in his savings account.
Hold on, Greg, before you tell me how much he's got, because I'm probably going to be envious. Let me take a break. We'll come back. We're talking with Greg Merced, father of six and founder of My Job Chart. Folks, you got to listen to this. This is too good to miss. We'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
We're talking with Greg Merced, father of six, and the founder of My Job Chart, a free chore app. Which has been in existence for, I think he says, 5 years now, and his oldest son, who 17, Greg, is that right?
17, yeah.
So has he been using this, have you been using this this free chore app on him for 5 years?
He's like the original guinea pig, the poor kid. he has lived it and breathed it and essentially has learned, I think, at the end of the day, the proof's in the pudding, right? So he's learned these things, and the kind of overall financial philosophy of My Job Chart is give kids jobs, let them earn money, and then they can save it, they can share it with charities, or they can spend it on things they want or need. And so at the end of the day, I checked his account balance yesterday on his savings account.
Mm-hmm.
He's got $8,800 saved.
Wow.
And for a kid who's 17, that's a lot of money. And if you look at it, that's more money than the average American family has saved up.
Well, so, yeah, but let me ask you this question. Forgive me, Greg. He's got $8,800 in his accounts that came from whom?
So I knew you were going to ask that question, and that's a great question. It came from him earning money around the house. It also came from a couple of summertime jobs he has had. And it also came from what I think is super important with kids, and that is a matching contribution from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I started that, and actually My Job Chart tracks that and figures that out for families every day right now. But we've set it up to where every time he saved a dollar, I would match it a dollar. And I think that's very key in a couple of ways. Number one, it puts their savings, process on turbo.
Yeah.
It also makes them very smart when it comes to, you know, when they get their first real job and they have a 401k, they're going to say, hey, I've seen this before and I like it.
And
they're going to do that.
Yeah, and that part I like about it, because this is training. Two things that occur here, it seems to me, and let me know if this is what you found. Number one is that when you save and you see your savings growing, you want it to grow faster. And number two, you understand the importance of saving, of managing money. Is that what you found with this app?
Absolutely right. And when, like I say, if they can get that really kind of early in life, when they're around that, you know, 8, 9, 10 age bracket, boy, that just becomes it's almost an addiction for them. He worked a roofing job, believe it or not, this summer, which is, you know, probably one of the hardest jobs you can ever do, especially in Phoenix, where we live. And he made quite a lot of money, and boy, 90% of his money he saved. So it's something that if you get it into them early, it sticks, and it's very impactful.
Yeah, I believe that. I really do believe that it is important that young people, get that experience. And once they've had that experience, there's no substitute for that. Okay, I got my own money in an account, and it makes them feel important about themselves.
It not only makes them feel important, but it empowers them. All of a sudden, they think that gives them some confidence that, boy, I can do things that other kids maybe can't do. I could buy something to generate some additional money. I can do, you know, it just really opens their eyes to what the possibilities are. And I think it's just a very impactful and amazing thing to do that.
Okay.
So start it early.
Yeah, My Job Chart. Freak. So what happens? I apply to you or I buy this app? Take me through it.
Yeah. So It's very simple. So you can download the app from the Apple Store or the Android Store, or you can just use it online on the website. And it's free to every family that would like to sign up. You load your family in there, and then you give your kids jobs. Start them off easy. Give them 3 or 4 jobs to do on a systematic basis, and then those jobs have points equated to them, and those points represent money. In our system, it's a penny a point. So it's very easy. So if you're going to wash the car for $10, that's a 1,000-point job. So kids do those points jobs. They get the points, and then they can, like I said, save them. They can share them with the charities that we have aboard, or they can spend them on something that they want or need.
Okay.
So that is finance 101. That's what all of us as parents and adults do. We go to work, we earn money, we save, we share, we spend.
Sure.
Same thing, just on a kid's level.
And what about with the kids? I mean, your oldest is 17. How old is your youngest? And we're talking with, by the way, Greg Merced.
The youngest is 8.
Is 8. Okay. You guys didn't waste any time, 8 to 17, right in there. Okay.
You're good with math. So that was a decade of absolutely
crazy. Yeah.
Before.
Talk about dirty dishes and bottles and everything else. But the important – I also have a sense that this kind of makes you guys – I think it makes a family – it binds a family closer together. I mean, I can see how, you know, everybody doing something and having a role to play tends to make everybody feel important and keep them feeling as a part of the family.
You bet. I mean, it really is kind of a team effort, especially, I mean, most people don't have as many kids as we have, but, you know, you had 3. 3's a crowd. And so, I mean, when everybody's kind of pulling in the same direction, it absolutely helps. And it I think it's a wonderful opportunity when kids start seeing this stuff and really having their eyes open to the work and money correlation. This is a great way for a family to really pull together on something that matters a lot, because money is a big deal. I mean, it's the biggest contributor of, you know, divorce in a family.
Yeah.
It has a lot of problems around that. So if you can figure it out early and all work together and pull together in the same direction, that's going to make a big impact in your family over the years.
I believe that. Now, let me ask you the other question, and I can hear folks pounding on their radios or saying or their computers, wait a minute. Who's, well, you know, let me hold it, because I'll tell you what the question is, and you can help us through it. My point is that with 6 kids times X number of points times X number of weeks adds up to a lot of money. So do you have to have a lot of money in order to make this kind of program work, especially if you got a lot of children? Or am I missing that it's not necessarily money driven, although money is the ultimate goal? This is Home and Family Finance. My guest is Greg Merced. He is the father of 6, and his app is out there, My Job Chart. When we come back, we'll learn more. Stay with us. Family Finance. I am your host, Paul Berry. My guest is Greg Merced. We're talking about 5 ways you can get your kids to do chores without complaining or paying them this summer. So let me get back to that with Greg to find out exactly. I don't know if we've gotten through the 5 ways, Greg, that you can do this. So help me out here.
Well, your question was a great question. Do you have to be rich to be able to pay your kids to do all this stuff around that? Yes, you have to be filthy rich. If you're not, forget it. No, I'm just kidding. We have almost 1 million people using My Job Chart, and we all have different, you know, financial situations,
sure,
different walks of life.
Right.
And so one thing that I'd like to mention is not everything that they have to do has to be about money. Some of the most fun things you can do with your kids is non-monetary. So, you know, if something that your kids like to do is go hiking or go swimming or whatever the case may be, that could be it. So they can earn 1,000 points and then go, the reward could be to go swimming or hiking as a family. So these everything doesn't have to be about money, but money is a motivator for kids, and if they figure it out, it's a good thing.
5 ways you can get kids to do chores. Did we, which ways, have we talked about any of those ways?
we keep wandering around. So I think one way is that you need to align their incentives. And we talked about that a little bit.
Right, we did.
If a kid is just driven, I've got, you know, four boys. If he's driven for a football or a skateboard or something else in his life, you know what? Align those incentives and say, hey, when you get enough points, we'll go get the football.
Got it. Okay.
Align those kind of incentives. Sure. I think that they really matter. If you have a daughter who is charitable by nature, align her incentives with a share partner that we have, a charity that's meaningful to her. And, you know, maybe it's the dog shelter or it could be the Cancer Society or whatever.
Whatever it is.
Align those incentives. And you watch out because kids will just take it and run with it.
That's wonderful.
I think that's one way.
Okay,
the,
go ahead.
The second way is I think it's a fantastic way to teach kids how to do their jobs or chores around the house without complaining by matching their contributions, like we said, about savings.
Okay, that's true.
So those are a couple of, I think, really good ways to get them motivated. Number three, you know, we alluded to this too, make it a team effort. If everybody feels like they're pulling together, you know, there's going to be less complaining.
Okay.
Number four, don't give them so many jobs that they feel like overwhelmed. I think you got to start kind of simple. Give them three or four that mean something to them. Maybe they love the dog. Well, let them walk the dog, and that could be one of their jobs.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be total drudgery.
No, give them credit for things that they even like to do is what you're saying, and I think that's so important.
Yeah.
It's a job. They like it. And
it's a job, and it needs to be done, but, you know, if your daughter likes the dog, have her wash the dog and walk the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a son who just is into cars, have him be the car washing guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever the case may be, but try to figure out something that's important to them and they like, and let them do it. And don't start with a few simple ones, not a million of them.
I tried to get all three of them to like cleaning out the fireplace, but it didn't work.
Great. It didn't stick?
No, they nobody liked to clean out the fireplace, so you know. But that's four.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
That's four. Number five is and you kind of like number four, but number five is don't worry about them doing hard things. Kids need to learn how to do hard things.
Yeah.
They need to get off the couch and quit playing video games so much, and they need to get out there and clean the fireplace. And you might have to stand there and help them, and coerce them along a little bit. But there's nothing wrong with good old-fashioned hard work and having them do stuff that is a little bit hard and a little bit, not the most fun thing to do.
That's right. Don't limit their horizons by your limitations. That means just because you think they can't do it, that's no reason not to ask them. Ask them to do it. If they can do it, they can. And if they can't do it, they'll let you know they can't do it. But challenge them to do things. Absolutely.
My oldest boy, his first job was working at a potato farm in Arizona. I mean, it's brutal. They threw 50-pound potato sacks for 12 hours a day. I mean,
that's great.
That's hard work, but he did it, and it made him stronger. And let him flourish.
And they grow up. I'm not worried about Greg Mercette's children. It sounds like you got good control of them, Greg. What a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming in and sharing with us. It's in a lighter vein. I love it, but it's still just as serious as anything we can do because it's all about condoing. Talk to you soon. Come back and see us again, would you?
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Goodbye, everybody out there. A pleasure to be with you. I'm Paul Berry. We'll be right back here again next week. Hope you'll join us then. Al, thank you very much. Hello.